This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. Our Master Cheesemaker program is one of the only two in the world. So it's no wonder every master in America has called Wisconsin home. Find your next favorite cheese and meet our makers at wisconsincheese.com.
Hello, welcome to Japan Eats. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, food writer and director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from Brooklyn, New York. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli in the supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi, ramen, izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and I try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. My guest today is Takatsuku Amano, or Taka Amano, who is the co-founder and CEO of American Shochu Company, based in Silver Spring, Maryland. Shochu is a traditional Japanese spirit, and it is more popular than Japanese sake in Japan. And if you compare sake and shochu, 4.2% of liquor tax comes from premium sake, whereas 14.8% comes from shochu, according to the Japanese government's data in 2019. But the number flips when it comes to overseas. In 2020, Japan exported about $212 million worth of premium sake, but only $10.6 million of shochu was brought outside the country, which was just 5% of sake's export. It is a shame because shochu is delicious as artisanal as premium sake. So that is why Taka decided to introduce the charm of shochu to America by producing his own brand in 2015. And he makes 100% barley shochu with his wife, Lynn Amano, in Maryland, and they have already won the 2020 American Craft Spirits Awards. So today we'll discuss why the successful biotech industry executive decided to produce the traditional Japanese spirit in America, how he studied shochu production techniques, how he produces his award-winning shochu with American ingredients in the climate of Maryland, why we should drink more shochu, and much, much more. But before we start, Japan Eats is available on the Heritage Radio Network website, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So please go to iTunes, Stitcher, or Spotify, whichever you listen to, and subscribe to Japan Eats. And please write a review. We really appreciate your feedback. Now, let's start a conversation with Taka Amano. Hello, Taka-san. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, this is exciting. So first of all, where are you from and what did you eat when you grew up?
So I was born in Tokyo, but my family is from Yokohama. And I have a varied childhood. I moved from Yokohama to New York when I was 4 years old. And we were 5 years in New York and then 2.5 years in L.A., and then we went back to Japan for a stint. And then I finished up high school in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, before coming over here to the States. So, yeah, what did I eat? First of all, I ate standard Japanese fare that my mother would make at home. I also was very much, hot dogs in Manhattan kind of kid. And then I learned some of the varied cuisines in Malaysia and had a great time there. So varied things that I ate growing up.
Mm. Wow. It's like that's almost the most diverse diet I've ever heard of as a child. Hey. So you are a New Yorker too, but when and why did you decide to move to New York?
So the first time around, my father was in international trade and the family came with him to New York. But then when he went back to Japan, we of course went with him. And I went to boys prep school in Japan and then went to Malaysia. I actually sat for the university exams, Tokyo University exams, like every other kid in Japan at the end of my high school career, didn't get in, and I ended up coming to the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill. And I've stayed since.
Wow. Okay. So, right. Well, that was a lucky thing, I think. Right. For us, anyways.
Right. My father would say that the timing was always perfect for me.
Right. So what was your career before you started your own distillery in 2015?
Right. So for most of my working career, I have had a consulting business helping American and Japanese companies work together in various forms. In the most recent years, that has evolved into a consultancy where I was helping U.S. companies go into the Japanese market and running subsidiaries for them. So I was the president of the Japanese subsidiary for a couple of biotech, U.S. biotech companies with Tokyo offices for 10 years. 10 years I traveled to Japan every month from Silver Spring, Maryland.
Wow. That is a commitment. Right. Okay. And then what was the process of opening? First of all, why did you decide to start a shochu distillery in Maryland?
Right. So shochu has always had been my drink of choice when I'm in Japan. When I'm in the States, I'm more of a whiskey or bourbon kind of person. But when I'm in Japan and on business, shochu on the rocks was always my drink. And seeing that there was almost zero awareness or distribution of shochu in the United States, and right around 17, 18 years ago when there was a big shochu boom in Japan, and we heard that there was that the Japanese had run out of sweet potatoes because they were making so much shochu. I was in North Carolina at the time, and the number one agricultural crop in North Carolina happens to be sweet potatoes. And so I looked around and I thought, well, you know, we have sweet potatoes here and we could send sweet potatoes to Japan, but that's not that interesting. But making shochu here would be. So that was the original idea. But then later on, as I was working and basically what we were doing is we were working in distribution, product distribution, sales and distribution, biotechnology products in the Japanese market. What that meant was I would travel all around Japan, talking to distributor presidents and owners, and did a lot of meetings, a lot of dinners, quite a bit of shochu, and ultimately saw an opportunity in 2015 to try to bring it over to the United States and start a distillery here.
Wow. Well, you liking shochu to making shochu, just like a huge jump. So you must have really some passionate feeling about shochu. So, but what was the process of opening craft shochu distillery in the U.S.? Do you have a lot of to go through, legal and administrative steps to go through?
Right. So as you might know, starting a distillery in the United States is not a simple process in general. You know, there's a lot of laws. Specifically, you can't own a distilling still until you have a distillery license. You can't have a distillery license until you have a distillery location that the TTB has approved and that you've bonded. Now, in most cases, if you're starting a gin distillery or a whiskey distillery, you pretty much know what the process is, what you need, what the equipment is that you need, because it's been done before. And you can go visit a distillery. In our case, I had visited many shochu distilleries in Japan, but none of that exists here. The equipment doesn't exist here in the same way that it is in Japan. There's nobody to go see their process. And the TTB was barely aware of shochu as an alcoholic product. So we actually had to have some discussions with the so TTB is Alcohol, Tobacco, and Trade Bureau. They regulate alcohol sales and distribution in the U.S., federal government. And we had a discussion about where shochu actually sits in the TTB list of alcohols and what it means to start a shochu distillery. You know, went through the whole process of describing the process and getting it approved. It was quite interesting going through all of those.
Interesting, or now you can say that on reflection, but I'm sure it was very hard. But I mean, so go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say that the TTB I found to be very helpful and accommodating and work. And maybe it was the specific individuals that I encountered, but I felt that I was very lucky in being able to work with people that were open to the idea and helped us through the process.
Hmm, that's very nice. Yeah, let's try to promote some craft business, right? I think that's the motivation behind their support.
Yeah, I think the TTB has been quite helpful in general in the craft spirit space, especially in recent years.
Right. But I mean, quickly going back to, you know, you wanted to make shochu, but you knew that you have to go through the kind of a lot of red tapes and a lot of, you know, physical work and paperwork. But you had that passion, like you knew you can make good shochu, or you can, you know, there's a phrase like, you know, before you cross the bridge, you just, you know, hammer the bridge so that it's not going to fall. But right. Is that kind of your personality, or you just pass it and then, oh, I didn't know that they passed it, the kind of thing?
You know, I certainly had a passion to do this. And I felt that the challenge of being the first shochu distillery in the United States was quite appealing. We did not know at all whether or not we would be able to come up with a good product or not. As a matter of fact, my original plan was to hire a distiller or a toji from Japan to come for a limited amount of time to help us start the process. But I did think that maybe I could try. I've always been a crafty and artistic kind of person. So I thought I would give it a try. And as it turned out, what we came up with turned out to be actually quite good. And I ended up taking it back to some people in Japan to kind of get them to vet it, and was told that it was that it would work. So that we ended up using our own process.
Wow. So you didn't realize your talent in shochu, right? We'll get into your shochu in a moment, but the first, what is that charm, the source of your passion of shochu for you personally? Like, why should we drink shochu?
Right. So I said earlier that I'm a bourbon and whiskey kind of person. And so I like my alcohols. I don't drink a lot, but I like quality spirits. And shochu has, you know, it fills that space in Japan. It's a distilled spirit. It's not a fermented spirit like sake. And it's not that I don't like sake. I like my fair share of good nihonshu, seishu, sake in Japan. But shochu has its unique character. You know, you can drink it on the rocks. You can drink it in a variety of forms. And it reflects both the personality of the distillery and the terroir, if you will, of where it's made very nicely. And so I've always thought that it was, and it's very culturally unique, right? It's a very Japanese thing. And so it had that great appeal, you know, as being a Japanese citizen myself, living overseas all these years. There was a special drive to be able to introduce that, you know, to my friends here.
Right. 100% I agree. And as I said in the introduction, shochu is very popular in Japan now, but it used to be used to carry like an image of working class blue collar drink. So could you tell us what happened to shochu to become such a popular alcohol nowadays?
Right. So I actually like to explain that I think that there's a lot of similarities between shochu and how it has evolved and how tequila has evolved in the United States. So, you know, when I was young in school, tequila came in yellow and gold or silver and gold. None of it was particularly great. So you would, you know, do shots with lime and salt. And that's how you did tequila. Why did you do that? Because you couldn't sip that stuff, right? It wasn't a sipping drink. We don't shoot shochu necessarily, but shochu also had that reputation and kind of positioning of a blue collar working class drink. And but then, as happened in tequila, where I guess first you know, Jimmy Buffett came along and sold a lot of margaritas, and it got into Mexican restaurants, and you know, the Eagles helped with tequila sunrises, and suddenly it became a popular thing. And then you know, Sammy Hagar came along with Cabo Wabo, high-end tequila. Patron certainly came out with their ultra-premium tequilas. And suddenly it became a high-end thing now you can go to tequila bars where they have high-end tequilas, and that's all they have. Well, shochu, I mentioned 17, 18 years ago, there was a big boom. A lot of what happened then was people discovered that shochu works nicely in cocktails or in, mixed with things like sodas, juices. And in Japan, we call those chuhai, but there was a big chuhai boom. And a lot of younger people especially started drinking a lot of shochu. And so I think there's a lot of similarities to making a margarita or a tequila sunrise from tequila, and making a chuhai or a shochu cocktail from shochu. And then as it was selling well, the distilleries started coming out with higher end products. And that became a thing. And you can go to shochu bars in Japan now, where the menu is all different kinds of shochu from all around the country, and you can try different versions. So I think that there was a kind of similar evolution there.
Interesting. It's very interesting. Yeah, and it's amazing, like, you know, tequila used to be really, like, affordable price. And if you go to, like, liquor store, it could be over $100 easy, so many brands, right. And which is great. And it should happen in about shochu, too, because it's such a precious industry, I mean, the tradition, but because of the traditional production system or method, the number of the distilleries are declining quickly too. So
right. Yeah,
I hope that you are going to educate the consumer market in America and people started to appreciate shochu. I hope right. It's going to happen soon. Yeah. Okay. And but the popularity of Japanese sake, even though there was dramatically surged in the last decades in Japan, why do you think shochu has not caught on in this country yet?
You know, I think that part of the success of shochu in Japan was primarily some of the very big shochu companies that we have there. You know, Ichiko and Kirishima are a couple of the very largest, and they do $500, $600, $700 million US in revenue a year in Japan or in their companies. And what we know in Japan is that those companies are very good at marketing and sales of the product. In Japanese business, we talk about kind of their skill at bringing the product to the market. I think some of what happened was those same methods that were used in Japan got brought over here to the United States. But as you know, Akiko, the same methods don't necessarily work in the United States. And I think that a lot of what I observe is that kind of thing. So, you know, I'm Japanese, so I appreciate what they do in Japan. And I recognize, I understand what they're doing. I also understand American business. And so I think that there was a big gap so far in promoting shochu here.
Right. Interesting. And I heard that, you know, there are a couple occasions like 70s, 80s and 2003 when shochu became some keywords gradually, you know, upgrading itself. And it was based on the national media. Like some famous person said, the Kirishima, it was a great shochu and everybody started by it. And that's kind of very easy manipulative market when I describe Japanese consumers market. And I mean, it could be good or bad. But also I think, you know, izakaya in Japan, if you go to Japanese izakaya, there's so many shochu, like cocktails, highballs at very reasonable price. So there's an outlet to be able to try a diverse taste of shochu. So that's not available here, at least right. yet. Right. So anyway, so but you produce shochu in Maryland. So how much is shochu known by the local community in Maryland?
So, you know, of course, we're in Maryland, and then, you know, my company is based in Silver Spring, but our distillery is actually in Frederick, Maryland, which is a little bit north of the Silver Spring, Montgomery County area, and a little bit more rural. It's up towards the mountains. And so it's very, you know, in many ways, rural America. And so that was where we chose to start the shochu distillery. This is really kind of in some way, partially because of where we were able to place the location. Frederick County is very open and receptive to breweries and distilleries. And they have been very helpful in us getting started. But there was also a thinking on my part that I wanted to do this split in the middle of America. You know, not in California or New York, where there might be a better receptivity to shochu, relatively speaking, but to try to do it where I'm not selling to just the Japanese or the Japanese friendly, but to, you know, Americans in general. And what we ended up doing was therefore figuring out how to sell to our neighbors. So my first outlet in Frederick was at the Frederick Great Frederick County Fair, and so it's an agricultural fair, right? It's we were in the building with the other craft spirits next to the rabbit building, I think it was, and people would come in looking for beer, and they would walk by my booth, and I would call them down. I'd say, "Hey, come try my shochu," and they would say, "What is that?" and we learned how to talk about shochu and how to present shochu to that market, and figured out what people liked. And but so now what has happened is I'm Silver Spring is in Montgomery County, Maryland, and Montgomery County is a very unique place in the alcohol business. It's one of the very few places in the country where the local county government still controls alcohol distribution. So all alcohol in Montgomery County goes through the county, and therefore has a reputation for being a hard market to work in. But it's also a relatively affluent, or at least parts of it are an affluent market. We ended up getting our product placed into all 25 Montgomery County liquor stores. I think we were probably one of the first Maryland craft spirits to do that. But then after a year of being in the stores, we ended up being the top-selling Maryland-made brand of alcohol in the Montgomery County liquor stores in 2019. And we were flabbergasted. It's like, wow. But I think what happened was the way that we were selling, which was really direct to customer. We were selling at the fairs. We were selling at craft spirits events, and especially farmers markets. We did a lot of farmers markets. And so we would talk to people one-on-one and introduce the product to them. And I think that was how we got the word out. You know, the fact that we were number one in the Montgomery County liquor stores means that people are going back into the liquor stores to buy our product, right? So it's not just that people were buying it because I was there and selling it to them, but they were actually going back to buy their second bottles. So and so that showed us that, you know, especially during 2019, we had started building up, a pretty good fan base.
But I'm super curious, when you introduced, farmer's market, it's very, very, like, most American thing. But then how did you introduce shochu? Or did you use the word shochu, or it's like a traditional Japanese, or just completely out of, this is a new spirit?
Right. So I did promote it as a new American, the new American spirit. But, you know, what does that mean, right? As I mentioned, I started out saying, hey, come try my shochu. And people would say, what is that? I don't know what that is. I eventually learned not to lead with that. I learned to lead with, come try the smoothest drink you've ever tried. And people would say, what? What did you just say? I said, come try the smoothest drink you've ever tried. They say, well, that's a big claim. So here, try a sample. So before COVID, we were able to give out samples. So I would provide samples. And what I did was, I was giving samples of a mixed cocktail. I would mix it with, you know, a soda or a juice, and eventually figured out which flavors were the most popular. But so people would drink it, and they would try it, and they would say, wow, that is smooth. Does that have alcohol in it? I would often be asked. And I was mixing one part shochu to three parts mixer. So that makes a 6% alcohol drink. So I would tell them, that's a 6% alcohol drink, you know, kind of like a strong beer. And then people would say, well, that's dangerous. but so that is how we, I think, got the word out and got people to try it.
Right. Well, it really proves how the taste was outstanding. So, yeah, that is amazing. All right, we're going to get into the products in a moment, but we'll take a quick break here. And so when we come back, we will discuss Taka's award-winning shochu and challenges he faces in making it in America. So please stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. In Wisconsin, cheese is our thing. Wisconsin is the only state in the country that requires a license to make cheese. From curds to cheddar, blue to brick, Wisconsin cheesemakers can do it all. We blend tradition with innovation to create an incredible variety of cheeses that you just can't get anywhere else. You've heard of a PhD, but have you heard of a PH cheese? Otherwise known as the Wisconsin Master Cheesemaker Program. This rigorous study of cheese is an elite accomplishment earned by only 80 talented cheesemakers in Wisconsin, and the program is only one of two in the world. Becoming a master cheesemaker takes 13 years and is basically like a doctorate in a specific variety of cheese, with intense requirements to succeed. Our Master Cheesemaker Program allows makers to perfect both the art and science of their craft in a tradition so rich you can taste it. Find your next favorite cheese and meet our makers at wisconsincheese.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Needs. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, and my guest today is Takatsugu Amano, who is the co-founder and CEO of American Shochu Company based in Silver Spring, Maryland. So let's talk about your shochu. So what is your philosophy of shochu production?
Right. So there were a couple of things. We wanted, if we were going to do this, and we were doing this crazy thing to start a new distillery and, a shochu distillery at that in the United States. So my wife and I said, well, if we're going to do this, let's do it right. And what does that right mean? Well, let's try to make something that would be exactly what we would want to drink. And What that meant was, first of all, we used 100% organic barley. You know, shochu only has four things in it. It has barley, koji, yeast, and water. So the water. Water was interesting. Water is often a key ingredient. But in our case, what I decided was to use reverse osmosis filtered water. And what that does is it takes the water factor out of the product. Or to put it a different way, it makes it so that I could make it anywhere and it would be the same because I'm using reverse osmosis filtered water. So that's what we did. And of course, it has a certain, you know, it's a certain kind of pure water quality that we can guarantee. So our product is 100% organic barley and reverse osmosis filtered water. And then the koji and the yeast we imported from Japan. And we do everything immaculately. You know, right now we're very small craft. So everything is handmade and, you know, we have full control over the whole process.
But how did you study how to make shochu? Because I heard that you visited a lot of distilleries, but right. It's not so easy, right?
So there's a lot of different variations out there in the world when you start looking into how to make shochu. And there's some contradictory information also. I decided to go to the source, which in this case, there is a Japan Brewery Association, a brewing association, Nihon Jozo Kyokai. And they're in Tokyo. And I went to visit them. And it turns out that they have published a textbook of the methodology of honkaku shochu production. Honkaku shochu being authentic shochu production. I asked to buy the book, and this was a very interesting conversation. At first, they said, you know, we don't sell that book to just anybody. Who are you? and so I had to go through explaining, you know, I'm actually a president of a company in Tokyo. My father is such and such. I had to go through my bona fides and convince them that I was a legitimate person trying to do what I'm trying to do. Now, I have interacted with the association, and in particular, Dr. Okazaki, who's the chairman of the organization. And they've been very friendly and helpful to us over the years. But so it was a combination of, now, you know, so there, it's a textbook. Of course, the devil's in the details. there's a basic process, but then we had to figure out actually how exactly that works and how we can make it operational. But that, so that's how we came up with the process. I put in phone calls to the Brewing Society. There are people on staff there that are highly experienced that I was able to tap some of their knowledge. But ultimately, there was trial and error that we did until we came up with a workable process.
I'm sure like millions of, because we've never done it before in America. So.
Right.
But the equipment, why did you import the equipment, or you just came up with something to replace?
So first of all, I have to explain. We're still currently in a very tiny incubator space. So we're in the incubator in Frederick. It's called Frederick Innovative Technology Center Incorporated, FITSI for short. And we're in a tiny room. And so I needed to find a still that I could use in that space and that I could, you know, do experimentation in. I actually went to visit Dogfish Head in Delaware. And they were just at the time that I went to visit, they were just starting to get into the distilling side of their business. And my wife.
So Dogfish is a craft beer company, right?
Right. They're a craft beer company. They recently merged with Samuel Adams. But they have a fantastic, they've always had fantastic products. We, my wife and I have been big fans. And so we went to visit on vacation, but we went on a kind of a detailed tour of their facilities. And one of the places that they took us to was a new distillery that they were starting to build. But as we're talking to our tour guide, come to find out that they started their distilling experimentation in the back of their restaurant in Rehoboth Beach. And he actually, in the tour, they took us to go meet the distiller. And so we go there and they have a still there. And so I talked to the distiller. I said, I explained what I was doing. I'm trying to start a shochu distillery and I'd love to be able to purchase your still. She said to me, I'm not going to sell you the still. I'm not going to sell you the still. We're still using it. But what are you doing? You know what? And she gave me a suggestion of which still that I should use. I looked it up and ordered one, and that's how we came up with our original still. So it's just a still off the shelf, you know, available over the internet that we started with.
Right. Interesting. Wow. So we are doing something from scratch. Very impressive. Right. So how do you describe the style of your shochu? Do you call it traditional, authentic?
Or... Right. So it's definitely a honkaku mugi shochu. So it's an authentic barley shochu. I will say that I was worried that there might be some reasons why we wouldn't be considered to be an authentic shochu. So when I took it back to the Japan Brewing Association and asked the chairman and his board to first taste it, and we talked about our process, and they have confirmed for me on a couple of occasions, say, yes, no, Amano-san, this is definitely honkaku shochu and you have a good shochu. They said to me, please sell it in America because we don't sell a lot of shochu in America.
Nice. So, but you know, you said that originally you had the idea of making a potato shochu, but you are producing 100% barley shochu. So right. Why barley?
Right. So, you know, I'm in Maryland and Maryland has a, a culture or a history of rye whiskeys, especially, and also barley has traditionally been grown here to some extent. And so I thought if I'm doing it in Maryland, we're not near the sweet potato source. That would be more like North Carolina. So let's start with barley. And the other thing was, even in Japan, mugi is kind of the introductory shochu. So my first idea with my very first product on the market was to come up with something that was easily accepted, you know, that I like that would be easier for the most widest number of people to be comfortable with, to be able to accept. And that, even in Japan, I think people would agree, would be barley shochu.
Mm.
One thing I wanted to mention too, when I say 100% barley shochu, I really mean 100% barley. And what I'm part of what I'm saying there is, we actually use barley koji, not rice koji. A lot of shochu are made with rice koji, and the main mash is the barley or the sweet potato. But in our case, we make our koji with barley and also make the mash with barley.
Right. So for listeners who are not familiar with the difference between rice koji and barley koji. So koji is a mold and it has to grow on something to grow more, release more enzyme to break down all the good stuff into sugar and alcohol eventually. So if it's barley, a lot of things in Japan, fermented food and drinks, it's based on rice koji. Koji grown on rice and applied to all the other ingredients. But you do barley, koji grown on barley. So it's like a more barley pure flavor, right?
What it really does is rice koji or shochu made with rice koji has some of that rice characteristic. And so it tends to be sweeter. You know, much like sake is, the driest sake is still pretty sweet. because the rice character comes through. And in our case, with the barley, koji barley shochu, we're able to make a more drier product.
Right. Wow. Amazing. Yeah, that's a very, very detailed and very interesting. It's just, I love that idea. I don't know how many shochu producers do that even, like barley. Barley is a smaller portion of the whole production anyway.
Right. Barley shochu, they definitely exist, but it's not, the majority is rice koji with barley shochu.
Okay. And so let's talk about, you have two products, so let's talk about them. So one is umai. Umai is delicious, like the name. And the other one is Roy's Demon. So could you tell us about each product?
Right. So umai was our original product. And again, we wanted to make a product that was, you know, ultra smooth and easy to drink. And the image that I had was like an ichigo. Right, ichigo is a very easy to drink, a very popular drink, and so that was kind of what I benchmarked when we made umai.
So this is like ichigo is like really one of the biggest brands of shochu,
right.
And it's like it's any price range, and it's very affordable, like popular one.
So that was our umai, and umai we make it at 24% alcohol, 48 proof. Which is very standard in the United States for shochu brought over here. Roy's Demon was kind of came out of two things. It was my desire to come out with that particular product, and also bartenders and mixologists were asking for a product like that. And what it is it's a 40% alcohol product. It's 80 proof, more like a whiskey. And of course, if you were to buy a bottle of Roy's Demon and look on the label, you would see the story of it. So Roy is my father, was called Roy. His name was Ryuichiro Amano, but that was a big mouthful of a name when he was a salesperson in New York City back in the 70s. And so everybody called him Roy. He was a sales guy, a Japanese sales guy in the United States back when, you know, that was a relatively rare thing. He was 6 foot tall, spoke 8 languages. He's a formidable guy, but he was also had a Japanese sensibility. He was maybe a little shy. And as a salesperson, what he used to do was he would fold these origami demon masks out of a scrap of paper, and he would hand them to his customers as an icebreaker. Got to be known for those. Everybody knew Roy's demon masks. And so that is the inspiration for Roy's Demon. He was also, my dad was also a whiskey drinker, you know, much like many Japanese businessmen.
Oh, wow.
And so this was my tribute to my dad.
I thought it was a scary origin, but it's such a sweet origin name. I love that.
By the way, the label for Roy's Demon, my son designed it for me. He has an art degree from Towson University. And so, you know, this is actually 3 generations of Amano men in this bottle.
Right. Wow.
The label won gold first prize in the inaugural American Craft Spirits Packaging Awards.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. Right. Okay. And then is it colored? Is it like a barrel aged or just 100%? It's just a pure?
It's not barrel aged. It is straight. It's a different blend of our shochu genshu, of our you know, so we distill in batches, and I blend different runs to come up with the particular product that we're looking for. And so that's what we're. It comes out to be a slight amberish color, a very light, faint color, but it's still a clear shochu product.
Right, Interesting. So that's why, you know, instead of drinking whiskey, there is a uniqueness of drinking this with 80 proof. So
Right. That's
amazing. Yeah. And then you co-founded your distillery with your wife, Lynn Amano, who has a background as a trained scientist. So how did you guys meet and who's in charge of what at the distillery?
Right. So Lynn got a PS biology from UNC Chapel Hill. And we actually met at college. We met in the cafeteria in Lenore Hall in UNC Chin campus. So the funny story about the scientist part is I got the process going and figured out how to come up with a prototype product. And Lynn came in to help me with production. And so the first thing she does coming in, she's a trained scientist. She's worked as a production manager in scientific labs. And so she says, "Where's your SOP?" And I said to her, "What's an SOP?" No, I was joking. My first job before I started consulting out of college was a part of my work was writing SOPs for an engineering department. But nonetheless, I said, "You know, I put a little bit of this and I do a little bit of that." She says, No. You have to write the stuff down. You have to put it in an SOP. And we did that. And I've, kid you not, our yield went up 20% after she made me do that. So definitely that is was a huge contribution of hers. Now, she has a background outside of her BS science biology background. She has gone on to be doing work in politics and political management. And, you know, full time, that's what she does. She works in providing resources to homeless people in Washington, D.C. As an advocate.
Wow. So a lot of things, a lot of elements in this business. Right. Okay. So what is the most challenging part of making shochu for you and Lynn?
Right. So, we had a certain amount of success with the product and, we were starting on an upward curve of people buying our product, but then COVID hit. And the timing was we were just about to launch a full fundraising campaign at the beginning of 2020. And of course, we were going to launch it in February 2020. And everybody knows what happened in February in 2020. So that did not happen. But we are currently in the midst of doing that fundraising run and looking to raise significant funds to put together a full distillery. So move out of our incubator space and get into production to be able to cover the Mid-Atlantic area. So the biggest challenge for us right now is pulling those resources, getting the funding.
Right. Well, hopefully the economy seems to be really doing well. So hopefully it's going to be happening very soon.
Right.
And shochu is made in warmer regions in Japan. So considering, the Japanese climate, and is Maryland suited to produce shochu?
You know, it's interesting. Up to this point, I've been operating in a temperature-controlled space. So it hasn't affected the process so much. But I think that when we get into bigger space and if it's not an air-conditioned, air-conditioned-controlled space, which it probably will be because we can do those in a warehouse space. But if it's not, if it turns out to be an outdoor, inside a barn kind of situation, I think that we can manage the temperature with heating systems. And what's interesting in this process, though, it's not just temperature that affects things. We found that the koji fermentation process slows down in the wintertime, even though the temperature is the same, because again, it's air conditioned or it's a temperature controlled environment that we're in. And so there are evidently other elements, you know, whether it's barometric pressure or whatever else might be affecting things that change in the process. You know, it's a biological process. So it's a living process, and you have to watch and look at the data and adjust as is needed.
Mm, right. But I heard Maryland has hot, humid summers. Mm-hmm. And right, so it's not completely out of the whole standard climate.
Right. It's not quite Kyushu, but it's not Tokyo either, Maryland.
Mm, right. Well, in Shoju, I think the whole history of Shoju started at least 15th century, but it was before refrigeration and any electricity. So I think in theory it can be made anywhere nowadays. Right. So what is the most rewarding and intriguing part of making shochu for you?
So, you know, when we came out with our products, we didn't know until we tried what it was going to be like. And it turns out that we were able to come out with some versions that are in some ways quite unique. You know, they're very smooth, but they have a unique flavor and smell profile to them. Dr. Okazaki commented that especially with our Roy's Demon, that there was a very unique barley character that was coming out that he hoped that we would be able to continue to replicate and retain. So it turns out that we were able to come up with something that is definitely shochu and yet definitely unique. And I think that is was very satisfying, and we have some ideas of things to do in the future that I think I'm greatly looking forward to pursuing.
Right. So and we have started to see more shochu distilleries in America recently. So how do you predict the future of shochu production and its popularity in this country?
You know, I think that we're in a phase that is still very early on in introducing and promoting the shochu category in the United States. I would love to work with other distilleries and probably especially the Japanese distilleries that are trying to come out here to provide a coherent vision of what shochu is in the United States. And at the same time, what we're doing is both using an authentic process, but also unique to, you know, to America. And so I think all of those things together, we would hope to be able to increase the popularity.
Right. Just like that's the path and trajectory of sake, right? The premium sake. Right. It's a more the merrier, kind of like the market idea. So more vendors gather, and then people started to be aware of it and enjoy. And then within the healthy competition of the community of producers, I think it's going to be a great thing. We see a really bright future because I think shochu is so interesting and diverse and unique and very artisanal. So a terroir based.
And as you probably, I'm sure, know, JETRO, the Japanese government, and JETRO in particular have been quite focused on helping promote shochu overseas and in the United States. And I've been in communication with them pretty closely the last couple of years. And so I think that as we go forward, we can continue to work closely together and, you know, with kind of the guidance and direction of, you know, organizations like JETRO also to give this a concerted effort. Mm. You know, being here in Washington, D.C., I have access to the embassy, the Japanese embassy. And there's some staff members there that are also very dedicated to helping with promoting Japanese foods and particular shochu. So as COVID opens up and we start getting back into things, I think that we'll be able to do some good activities to promote the the product and the popularity.
Right. Well, your product, the quality of your product is really proven to be so good that, yeah, it's great. You are presenting a model of good spirit called shochu to this country. So that's exciting. So what are your plans and dreams?
So right now we're looking to expand into probably a 10 to 15,000 square foot space to get into a full production mode. And we're raising enough capital that hopefully we'll be able to do a full-scale launch into the Mid-Atlantic area. And then beyond that, you know, that's kind of our initial real foray into the marketplace, and then planning to expand to the rest of the U.S. and also overseas. I actually have had interest to kind of reverse export back to Japan. There's quite a bit of interest over in Japan for a product. You know, it's a unique product, right? It's the only American shochu. So we would like to do some of those things. And then in terms of the product, one of the things I think that would be kind of foremost on my mind is to develop another line of products. Well, so first of all, we're planning to do the expansion with shochu cocktails. So, you know, canned cocktails as part of our product line, and figuring that that will be a great way to introduce the product, remotely to new customers.
Right. Well, the canned cocktails in Japan, it's just everywhere.
Right.
So
right. It's huge.
It's not the cheap kind of, you know, canned soda or anything. It's really a viable way to taste the products easily.
High-end shochu cocktails has been something that the industry in Japan, the distilleries in Japan, have been trying to promote. So I think it's a very similar thing that we're planning to do here. You know, we have some visibility into what kind of cocktails people like here. And so the plan is to put those into cans and put it out there. But then I would also like to come out with some new shochu products. So, you know, we don't have the exact same regulations that distillers in Japan have. So we can do certain things that you might not do in Japan. You know, it's interesting. They have not licensed the new shochu distillery in Japan for many, many years. I think they don't want to allow additional competition beyond what's already there. So, you know, somebody pointed out to me, I am the first generation shochu distiller in many, many years.
Interesting.
Right. But so as that, I think that there are some ideas of coming out with some unique products. And, you know, being in Maryland, one of the first things that comes to mind is to produce a rye product. So a rye shochu.
Wow.
So that's kind of in the plans.
Right. That sounds very terroir-driven, delicious shochu.
Right.
Wow. Okay. So, well, that's exciting. So please do keep me posted, and you can come back when a new product come out and new things come out. You can just come back and talk about it. And so where can we find your updates online and on social media?
So I think primarily right now, our website, AmericanShochu.com, is going to be the place to go. I was doing a bit of Instagram at American_Shochu, but we're regrouping how we're operating right now. So there hasn't been a lot of activity recently. But as we start on the expansion, I think that you'll see a lot of our information there also. So I think those two places are the best places to look for us.
Okay, great. So good luck.
So much.
So, and thanks so much for joining us today, Takasan. Now, hopefully, we'll see you soon here again.
Yep, wonderful. Greatly enjoyed it. Thank you.
Right, thank you. And listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for show topics or guests, please contact us at japanese@heritageradionetwork.org or akikokatema.com. Japanese is a weekly program and always available at heritageradionetwork.org as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. Our engineer is Kevin Chang Bam, and thank you for listening. I will see you next week.
Japanese is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network, Hood Radio supported by you. For freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a non-profit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thank you for listening.